Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we're going to try this again. I forgot to unmute us, so here we go. Hey, if it's a WWE Premium Live event in January, then it's the Royal Rumble. This is Wrestling Night in America for January 17th, 2024, post-Rumble. I'm Nate Lindberg from PWT Talks NXT right here on the Daily Cast, and I'm filling in for Greg Parks, who is actually in attendance at the Rumble tonight, and he's going to be calling us a little bit later on. Fingers crossed. He said he'd call, so hopefully we hear from him to get a bit of an in-person perspective. And with me to break the Rumble down is Brendan LeClaire. Brendan, good to be doing this. Good to be doing this with you again, dude.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely glad to be here. And you know, we're kind of repeating ourselves inside baseball, but
we are. I scripted this out. I feel like the first time I went through it was better, but whatever. At
yeah,
least I realized like 2 minutes into it, I didn't hit.
It's fine. It's buried. It's lost to time. You and I are
yeah.
the ones that heard it, but it was a really great intro. It was just,
right.
Yeah, A plus. So anyway, yeah, very, very glad to be here. Glad to talk about what is typically one of my favorite shows of the year. And as I mentioned before, obviously there is a lot going on in the wrestling world, and it was interesting to watch this show juxtaposed with everything that we know that is going on. And obviously tonight we're going to be talking about this event and the storylines within it. But there is sort of that cloud, that the cloud that certainly hangs over things right now, and for good reason.
No, 100%, 100%. There's a lot going on in the wrestling world, and we can't kind of pretend that there's not an elephant in the room. So I'm sure, you know, we'll probably wind up talking a little bit about that tonight. But first, let's actually go ahead. We're going to go. Well, you know what? I'm going to let you decide. Which Rumble would you like to start with and break down first, Men's Rumble or Women's Rumble?
I think we go right in order. Let's start with the Women's.
All right, we'll start with the Women's Rumble. So I'm going to go kind of rapid fire through the entrance, who got eliminated by who. We'll go through all of that. We'll kind of talk a little bit about it. Then we'll open up the phone lines, and we'll kind of just – we'll go crazy from there, guys. We'll see where the night takes us. All right, so entering the Women's Rumble, number one – is Natty. Number two, a returning Naomi, which was pretty cool. And what I one of the things I thought was really sweet was they mentioned that she was a TNA Knockouts champion, former champion, which comes into play in a little bit. We saw Bayley come in at number three, Candice LeRae come in at number four, Jordynne Grace, current TNA Knockouts champion, coming in at number five. We saw Indy Hartwell coming in at six, Asuka coming in at seven. Then we saw our first elimination, Indy Hartwell by Bayley. We saw Ivy Nile coming in at eight, Katana Chance at nine, Bianca Belair at 10, Kairi Sane at 11. Then goodbye, Candice LeRae. And she got eliminated by the current members of Damage Control in the ring. Tegan Knox came out 12. Then Natty was eliminated by Tegan Knox, who was eliminated by Bayley. Caden Carter comes out number 13. Kairi Sane eliminated by Caden Carter. Asuka was eliminated next by Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Chelsea Green comes out at number four. Jordynne Grace gets eliminated by Bianca Belair. Piper Niven comes out at 15. Xia Li at 16. Zelina Vega at 17. Maxine at 18. Caden Carter eliminated by Piper Niven. At 19, we see Nia Jax. Xia Li is eliminated, and I did not write down who she got eliminated by. We'll figure that out in a minute. Ivy Nile gets eliminated by Nia Jax. Shotzi comes out for number 20. Maxine gets eliminated by Bayley. Piper Niven by Nia Jax. Gets eliminated by Nia Jax. Katana Chance gets eliminated by Nia Jax. Becky Lynch comes out 21. Chelsea Green gets eliminated by Becky Lynch. Alba Fire comes out at 22. Shayna Baszler at 23. 24, we see Valhalla and my man R-Truth. Then R-Truth and Valhalla swiftly get eliminated by Nia Jax. I believe 13 seconds for Truth and 5 for Valhalla, if I'm remembering correctly. At 25, we see Meechan. Then we see Alba Fyre get eliminated by Naomi. 26, Zoe Stark, as Zelina Vega gets eliminated by Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. We see NXT's Roxanne Perez come out for number 27. Shayna Baszler, Meechan, and Shotzi all get eliminated by Nia Jax in short order. Jade Cargill debuts at number 28, she swiftly eliminates Nia Jax. We see Tiffany Stratton come out at 29. Liv Morgan at number 30, returning from injury. We then see Zoe Stark get eliminated by Liv Morgan. Roxanne Perez get eliminated by Tiffany Stratton. Becky gets eliminated by Naomi. Naomi's eliminated by Jade Cargill. Bianca by Bayley. Tiffany Stratton by Bayley. We get down to the final three between Jade Cargill, Liv Morgan, and Bayley. Jade Cargill gets eliminated by Liv Morgan, and Bayley eliminates Liv Morgan for the win. Seven eliminations for Bayley, and the match length. I don't have the. I know it was over an hour that she was in the match. Match length 64 minutes 58 seconds. That was a mouthful. But I'm glad. I'm glad I went through it and wrote it down the way that I did. Really glad to see Bayley get this here. I was coming down to the final three. I wasn't quite sure which way they were going to go. Like, Liv Morgan just returning seemed plausible, but not super, like, didn't seem like it was a small chance, small percentage. But Bayley, there were certainly some possibilities, and there are quite a few possibilities there with storylines, which I'm sure we'll get into. And of course, Jade Cargill debuting. If she won the Royal Rumble, you know, where would she go? Raw, SmackDown. We still, you know, don't quite know where she's going to wind up. So, you know, we may have had an answer. We still don't. Whatever. But she'll, I'm sure, play into something relatively soon. I think this was the highlight of the night for me personally. But I've talked quite a bit here, Brendan. Well, how did you feel about the Women's Rumble? And then we'll get into it from there.
Yeah, probably undoubtedly some recency bias for me, just because I it's been a bit since I've seen any of the other Women's Royal Rumbles. But when this wrapped up, I thought that match wise, it might have been the best of the Women's Rumble matches. And there have been a couple of ones that I would consider good, and some that were not so great. But this had a lot of stuff that I really, really liked. I thought that, for one, the biggest issue that the Women's Royal Rumble match has had for a long period of time, really since it started back in 2018, is that they just didn't have the roster depth to fill it out. And so you ended up with one of two things, either a large influx of NXT names that the crowd was not yet familiar with and therefore weren't particularly interested in, or the other alternative was a plethora of women from yesteryear. And that's a crutch that has worked in the past for the men's Royal Rumble, because there's such a massive breadth of options to choose from when it comes to former wrestlers. But in the women's division in particular, it's much harder to pull viable names from a hat when the women were so underutilized back during that time period. So it's much harder for them to pull from the well with legendary female wrestlers. You know, they've done it with Trish Stratus in the past. They've done it with Lita. Michelle McCool has had multiple spots. And the first two there, Trish and Lita, it's always good to see them, but they've done that many times, most times, in fact, and Trish is just coming off of a pretty lengthy run last year. So that doesn't seem like it would have been a particularly big deal. So instead, this year they did two things. They did bring in a few NXT talents, but most of them were names that the main roster has already been privy to, that they've already brought in for one shot or another, be it a previous Royal Rumble match or, you know, just an appearance here or there on Raw and SmackDown, as they've been doing with some of the men. And then they've just been doing a much better job in recent weeks building the women's division in general, especially the tag division. And so there were a lot of women who may otherwise have felt like wasted spots here, but because they've been appearing so regularly on Raw and SmackDown and in contention for the women's tag team titles, it actually felt like it was a relatively star-studded match. And, you know, I'm not arguing that it's, you know, the most star-studded Rumble or ever or anything by that means, by no means, but there were a good number of big names in there, and I felt like they kept the pace moving well. They built specific spots around certain wrestlers who they needed to showcase. Naomi had her big return and got a great reaction when she came out. She lasted for the majority of the match. They had the big entry for Jordynne Grace, who looked really impressive despite being, you know, eliminated rather unceremoniously midway through. But for someone who's not under contract and who's appearing as a contracted talent from another company, I thought it was a really impressive showing and not something that we're used to seeing WWE do at all.
Yeah.
And then you go right down the line, and there were just good showings for, you know, Bianca Belair, for Piper Niven had some good spots in there. Nia Jax, who, you know, I have never been a particularly big fan of Nia, but I think she's been drastically better during this run. And especially, you know, the last few weeks, I thought she had a really good match with Becky Lynch and then did some good stuff in here. And then obviously you can point to, you know, just the massive, just star-making performance of Jade Cargill, where she comes out there and instantly the crowd responds to her as one of the biggest stars on the show. I mean, it was surprising. I expected the crowd to know who Jade was and to treat her like a star, but I didn't expect her to get the reaction that she did. And I didn't expect the stare down she had with other wrestlers, particularly Bianca Belair, to get over as big as it did.
No, I agree. Like, Jade came off as a massive star here tonight, and I really liked the way that they kind of built up Nia Jax. I think she had 6 eliminations, mm-hmm. and they build her up. And then Jade comes out and, you know, winds up basically just plowing through Nia. And they've spent, I think it was 2 Rumbles now, kind of building it up where, you know, I think it was 11 women last Rumble, you know, and tonight, you know, same thing. It was nobody could really take Nia down. So they build her up. Jade comes out, boom, instant credibility.
That single arm deadlift.
Oh my God.
Flexed with Nia on one shoulder was wild.
Right? Like, absolutely, absolutely incredible. I think between that, the stare down between her and Bianca Belair, and I thought it was really, really smart that they actually, I don't think they actually touched. I know they didn't touch in that stare down, but I don't, for the rest of the Rumble, I was trying to pay attention, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really smart they didn't touch, at least in that moment, you know, build the suspense and build for that match. That's obviously the crowd really reacted to that. Mm-hmm. You know, there were obviously some comedy spots here, like with R-Truth, which I thought was fantastic. Coming out at 24, which was, spoiler, his number in the men's Royal Rumble. So, oops, he got it wrong and then still gets it wrong from there, but we'll get there. But we also had Maxine with a couple of comedic spots, Chelsea Green with the comedic spots, but we also saw like Tiffany Stratton and Roxanne Perez, two wrestlers down in NXT that, you know, I talk about quite a bit, covering NXT you know, for the Torch, not only in high profile spots, but they performed exceptionally well. I feel like the spotlight probably on Tiffany Stratton a little bit more, but the fact that the two of them got kind of a highlighted role there, especially towards the end, and shared a ring with the likes of Jade and, you know, Tiffany Stratton, or sorry, not Tiffany Stratton, Liv Morgan, you know, and I think Naomi and Becky were still in the ring at that point. It speaks wonders, I think, for, you know, those talents as well, for, you know, the NXT talents that were here tonight. And the men too, we'll get there. But we had some great showings from NXT tonight. All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about on the Rumble real quick, Women's Rumble, or should we open it up to phone lines?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, we talk so much about different competitors in this match, and we talk very little about the winner in Bayley.
I know. And she had a great showing too.
Yeah, it's almost by design though. I think it was kind of cool that they let her. They told a lot of story with Bayley in the early going when she was in there with Damage Control. I liked the stuff of, you know, Asuka and Kairi getting eliminated in relatively short order by Katana Chance and Caden Carter. And then the camera cuts directly to Bayley, and Bayley looks down at them and said, "Hey, what the heck was that? I thought we had a plan." So clearly they're trying to sow the seeds for Bayley breaking away from Damage Control. And I thought they did a good job of setting Bayley up to kind of be the Iron Woman, to be the one who was left alone, left for dead, all of her partners and her allies are gone, and she just manages to survive. The match wasn't necessarily built around her, but rather the idea that she was just kind of a survivor. She was just kind of there, which, while she's a heel, and she still is, it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to make her a huge focal point where she's dumping out women left and right. Rather, it makes sense that she's the one that's kind of hanging in the corner. She's just off to the side. She's getting opportune eliminations when the time arises. I thought they handled, you know, the booking of her leading up to, you know, the finale really well. And you could sense, too, that the crowd is starting to build momentum behind her. So I think they're going to have a really impressive turn when the time comes.
Oh, no, I agree. And I really, like you're saying, I really like the way that they booked Bayley in throughout this whole thing, you know, over an hour in the match. And, you know, I'm looking through I have an Excel spreadsheet. Like, when do I do that? But I don't even do that for work. No, I do that for work, but still. I'm looking through the sheet real quick, you know, seven eliminations, and they're spread throughout the course of the entire match. She got a couple early, and then, you know, a few later on. And you remember she's there, but then, you know, obviously, you know, other people are kind of getting their spots in, and, you know, she's selling or working somebody else in the corner or what have you. And she's not the focal point of the match. But like you said, they did a really good job of making her relevant and, you know, throughout the course of the match. Like I said, it came through quite a bit there. There was one other thing that I wanted to say, and it's not coming to my mind, but that's fine. So with that said, I'm going to open it up to the phone lines. We have quite a few people listening right now. We got quite a few people that want to jump in. I'm going to try to get to everybody. So we're going to try and limit questions. Let's say two, three, if all possible, and then we'll kind of go from there. But we got at least six people that have their hand raised. 515-605-9345. If you're listening live and you want to talk, you can hit one, and that'll let me know that you want to talk. Put a little hand next to your phone number. If you want to talk tonight, if you're listening live, you don't want to talk on the phone, you want to send an email tonight, you can send it to pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, because that's the mailbox that I have access to. Typically it's the Wrestling Night in America mailbox, but tonight it's that one. And we'll go from there. So with that said, we're going to go with area code 410. They've been patiently waiting the longest this whole time here. So we'll go with them. And what'd you think of the Royal Rumble?
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Not too bad. How are you, my friend?
This is Reverend Keith in Baltimore.
Yes, it is. Keith, what did you think? What did you think of the show?
I thought it was okay. The two Rumble matches were spectacular. And as I tweeted in response to one of Raj Geary's comments during the show, I think that this was undoubtedly the best women's Royal Rumble match ever. I mean, you had the return of Naomi. You had undoubtedly the unprecedented TNA Knockouts Women's Champion Jordynne Grace appear in a WWE ring. Now, albeit Mickie James appeared a few years ago, but she's a WWE legend. She's a future WWE Hall of Famer. This was a first.
Right.
Jordynne Grace, what made this unique was just a few nights ago they had the rematch that was taped last weekend where Trinity, Naomi, laid down or did the honors for Jordynne. So I thought it was a great moment when they hugged in the center of the ring, because not only did she put her over in Hard to Kill, but she put her over last weekend at the final TV tapings before they wrote her out. Then you had what was one of the greatest moments of the night, and I even had this seconded by my nephew who's there in attendance. He couldn't wait for us to go together to Philly for WrestleMania. So he's down at the Royal Rumble tonight, and he was telling me that it was a huge, massive pop for Jade Cargill in the stadium tonight. And just to see the way that they have pushed her, the way that they have presented her, I think it was you, Brandon, that said that they have really – outdone themselves by presenting her as a star. And I think you said you were even shocked. I'm not shocked, because Jade has all the attributes. She has the look. She has the charisma. They just need to hone in on her wrestling skills. And she looked phenomenal tonight. And when she dumped Nia Jax, I think the place just lit up, you know. So what were your overall thoughts on the Women's Royal Rumble match itself, as opposed to prior Women's Royal Rumble matches in the last few years?
Brent, I'm going to throw it to you, because you said very, very, very similar things earlier.
Yeah, to start out the conversation about this match, I said that, you know, I might have a little recency bias because it's been a bit since I had watched any of the other Women's Rumble matches, but my thought coming out of it was that it may have been the best one. I thought that they did an exceptionally good job at story building for a number of angles, and I kind of laid out the reason why I thought that going with a field of pretty much exclusively talent that is available to them on a weekly basis, rather than relying on wrestlers of yesteryear, was not only a good move, but it was the first year that they were able to do it and be confident in it, because they've been doing such a good job in the last few weeks of featuring a diverse cast of women on TV, particularly through the rebuilding of the women's tag division. And so I thought that really bolstered their ability to be able to present this match the way that they did. And yeah, I thought that they told effective stories. They built up a number of women in a variety of different ways. They gave a lot of different women some good shine and some good spots to excel. I mean, you talk about Naomi having big spots here, Jordynne Grace having big spots, Nia Jax, Piper Niven gets good spots. Chelsea Green is a standout because of the excellent comedy work that she did throughout. And then obviously the massive debut for Jade Cargill. You just go down the list, and there was just a lot of really good performances in this.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I feel like everybody that was in this match was booked meaningfully. You know, even Ivy Nile, you know, I feel like she had a pretty good showing here or a great showing here tonight. Bianca Belair, that stare down between she and Cargill, like that was awesome. Like the pop for that, and even for, like, me as a wrestling fan, I'm just like, oh yes, like it's something I've wanted to see for a little while. But absolutely, I feel like the way that they booked this was was a great way just to get everybody, to get shine on everybody. I don't think anybody walked out of this, you know, worse for wear by any stretch. You know, I'd probably agree with you guys at this point. Yeah, I might need to watch the rest of the Women's Royal Rumbles, you know, again, recency bias, but I really, really dug the way that they presented this, booked this. There are quite a few different, you know, angles that can come away from this, especially, again, you know, me being an NXT guy, you know, I'm thinking we've got, you know, continuation of Roxanne and Tiffany Stratton down in NXT. So I'm excited for that. So yeah, you know, I agree. I think this was, if not the best Women's Rumble so far, ranks right up there. Yeah, Keith. What else do you have for us?
Now, the earlier portion of your show, I had you guys muted while I was watching my good pal Byron host the post-conference that was led by Bailey. And secondly, Cody came out, and Nick Houseman, who is no stranger to controversy, asked Cody about the dark cloud hanging over WWE, which I heard Brandon mention, and we all are just furious about. And Cody just said that, you know, everyone is like a family, and they heard the news when we all heard the news, and that, you know, the good thing about the whole situation is that this weekend they had over 50,000 fans to perform in front of, and everyone treated them equally as if, you know, it was status quo, that nothing had ever happened, that it didn't stop the enthusiasm of the crowd in Tampa tonight, and that he was just honored to have won before this enthusiastic crowd. So I'm saying all that to say that I'm glad that the stars, the talent, the production crew, the announcers, all of them really did a wonderful job in spite of all of the negativity, all of the controversy, all of the lewd, shrewd accusations that have come out over the past 72 hours. I thought that everyone stepped up their game. I mean, I was disappointed, as I was saying a few moments ago, at the lackluster matches between the Undisputed Title match and especially the Logan Paul KO match. We could have done without that match. I mean, but the two Rumble matches, in my opinion, they really delivered. What are your thoughts on the overall presentation by the talent tonight?
Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a really good job overall. This is a strong roster, a strong crew, and they are on a very, very hot run of pay-per-views, premium live events, and shows. I mean, going into this week, WWE was the hottest that it's been in, I mean, probably a couple decades, and that is in no small part thanks to the talent and their dedication and their commitment and, you know, finally being able to portray themselves and be booked in ways that are satisfying to both them and to the audience. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who coming into tonight were probably really excited about the Royal Rumble coming into this week and felt let down and even, you know, morally conflicted as to whether or not to watch this show. And I would never fault anyone or judge anyone for deciding that the events that took place this week were too much for them to continue to support this company and to you know, that the situation at hand was far too serious and would hamper their enjoyment too much. And on the flip side, I think there are those who absolutely agree that everything that went down was morally reprehensible. They can't, you know, fathom it. And at the same time, want to support these wrestlers, these people who they believe in, who they like, who they watch weekly, and who had nothing to do with this, who are,
yeah, I agree.
You know, are victims of you know, not in the true sense. I certainly don't want to compare them to what, you know, this poor woman went through. But they're victims of circumstance in the sense that, you know, there is serious potential for eyeballs on the product to be lost because of something that one man and some of his cohorts are responsible for. And the talent doesn't deserve that. And so they, you know, they go out there tonight and they prove that, you know, they're worth spending your time on. Now, does that erase anything that happened? Of course not. And I understand fully if people are not able to look past that. The talent's going to do what they always do and what they can do for the people who are willing to continue on. And I thought, you know, everybody put their best foot forward tonight. I don't think that it was – I don't think that this felt like a show that was terribly out of the ordinary, that anybody went just so far above and beyond. It felt like business as usual. And I think, you know, for the talent, that's a good thing because business has been pretty good.
Yes,
you know,
it's at its highest.
No, go ahead, Keith.
It's business is at its highest it's ever been, and it's at its peak. I don't think it's been this high, if ever, since the glory days of the late 90s, you know, during the WCW, WWE Monday Night Wars, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, 20
house,
years at least. Yeah.
Yes, the house show sales are up. Television ratings are up, you know, merch sales are up. Everything is up. And like I said, Cody said it best. He said, I'm here, and when it's all said and done, when the story is finally finished, you're going to look back and say that he was the quarterback during the greatest wrestling era of all time. That's what he said on this post-Royal Rumble press conference, which Triple H is wrapping up now. But yeah, I think WWE is doing a phenomenal job, and I want to say to those of you who did not notice, who might be listening to me, I thought the commentators, Cole, Corey, and Pat McAfee did a wonderful job overselling, I think, like never before, and really pushing the women during that Women's Rumble match. And I think they did that because of the dark cloud. I mean, Pat McAfee was just excellent tonight. I've never heard McAfee be on point like that. And he was really promoting Jade, Naomi, even Jordan Grace coming over from TNA. You know, he was really, you know, pushing them to the moon, and so was Corey. And I think they probably were instructed to do that. And even if they weren't, you know, they did that out of compassion for what has happened. So I thought overall tonight, you know, with the exception of the lackluster two matches in between, I thought WWE did an impeccable job of turning this weekend around. And I'm sure that the views will show that on Peacock. And, you know, thank you guys for taking my call. I'm looking forward to this Road to WrestleMania, which began tonight. And one of my two predictions, by the way, was right. I had Cody and Becky winning, but I see why they had Bayley win, because it's a more important story there with her eventually being kicked out or voluntarily leaving Damage Control. And I'm still going with my prediction that I made last week before I go, that The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, will probably be a special enforcer for the Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns title match at WrestleMania. Thanks for taking my call, and I pray that justice is served. Have a good week and enjoy your show.
Go Ravens, Keith.
Thank you.
Thank
definitely.
You very much.
Go Ravens. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes. All right. Thanks very much, Keith, as always, man. No, I agree with you guys. I mean, it's a horrible situation. I mean, I actually sat down and read most of the legal document that came out, the 67-page document. And
I read it all.
Yeah, I got through most of it, and then my sister and her boyfriend showed up kind of randomly, and I was like, oh, and I never was able to get back to it before the Rumble started. So, but I got like probably about 50 pages in, and that was enough.
Nothing like reading that and then having to pull yourself out and socialize.
Yeah, tell me about it, right? I mean, the sad thing is disgusted and horrified as I was by it. None of it surprised me by him, based on, you know, stories we've heard in the past, the way that he's booked himself to be. I mean, just think of the Trish Stratus storylines. The first thing that comes to mind, you know, bark like a dog, things like that. It's none of it surprises me. You know, whether or not the truth It is the truth. You know, I'm hoping we wind up getting the truth eventually, one way or another. But you know, if this is what actually did, you know, occur to this poor woman, I can certainly understand why people would have trouble separating WWE from Vince McMahon, not just between this incident, but I mean everything between Saudi Arabia and I mean just countless other things that have come up, you know, with WWE over the years. And I couldn't blame anybody that was like, this is the icing on the cake for me.
I've seen a lot of, obviously, there's two drastically opposed schools of thought that inevitably comes with a story like this. You know, one is innocent until proven guilty, and the other is believe women. And, you know, statistics usually bore out that the number of women who lie about this kind of thing is very small. And yep. Ultimately, I think that, you know, if you're in the former crowd of innocent and proven guilty, I understand the concept, and I agree to a certain extent. But I would challenge you to take a real look at the things that Vince McMahon has said, the things that he has happily participated in and done on television in the form of storylines, the lawsuits that he's already settled, and the things that you've just heard over the years. And Nate, like you said, like, it's not all that surprising. And, yeah. And that's it's awful. It's awful to think that it's not all that surprising.
Right. It really is. And I don't want to go there, but I'm going to go there. I don't know if I should. Stop me if I shouldn't. But, you know, there's something too in there, you know, he named certain toys after performers within the company, right? And how would you feel being John Cena, Roman Reigns, Undertaker? I mean, anybody that had a close relationship with him that, I mean, probably had nothing to do with this, I would hope had nothing to do with this, but now all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, like, how am I there are so many layers to this that and I'm not trying to downplay anything that the woman went through, Janet went through whatsoever, but there are so many layers that affect so many different people who within the company knew what was going on, who covered things up, like, it's who can you trust, who can't you trust? Is it, you know, does Nick Khan just wipe out everybody backstage that, you know, in a high position that's from the McMahon era? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
In reading through the document, to me, no one comes off particularly well, of course, but
no.
Of the unnamed people in the document, corporate officer number one, there's some real issues there, and I would hope that person is no longer with the company, but if they are, I'm just kind of running through my head of a list of people that it could be. And
yeah, me too. And there's one that in particular, and I don't even want to say the name, and I'm just like, nah. But there's a few in particular that come to mind, and it's like some of those names are like, how could they not have known or had some. I don't know. I don't want to go. We could go into a rabbit hole of speculation and all of that.
And don't forget the Ronda Rousey tweet from earlier today.
I didn't even see that, to be honest with you.
Okay. So Ronda essentially, in response to everything going on, just said that Bruce Pritchard is an avatar for Vince McMahon. And
that's what I thought you were going to say.
And if Bruce is still with the company, then Vince is still with the company, is what her assumption was, and said that was the case as early as last year, that Vince was booking through Bruce Pritchard.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. It would not surprise me whatsoever. So, all right. With that, let's, we're going to go back to the phone lines. Greg has called in. However, before we go to Greg, I'm going to throw to Brian from Phoenix, who's been patiently waiting here as well. Brian, how are we doing tonight, man?
Hey, Nate. Hey, Brandon. Hopefully you both have a real good night. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problems. What'd you think of the Rumble? What do you got for us?
I really enjoyed the night. I'm not a good judge of, like, okay, was 2020 better than 2024, things like that. I'm gonna bring up two things, both really briefly, so Greg can get on. You can have some more callers on and read some emails. And I hope you both have a real good night. Hopefully everybody out there has a really good night as well. Hi, Reverend Keith. And go Detroit Lions, too, by the way. I'll throw that in right now. Brandon, you made a really
good
point. I didn't think about it until you said it, about the legendary, there not being any legendary women this year around. I didn't think about it. So you said that was a really good point. But you haven't talked about the Men's Royal Rumble yet. I know you're going to get there eventually, Nate. But I was really impressed with Bron Breakker. And you know, I was impressed with what he did, but then also how they utilized him, where they came in and gave him some really good spots, made him look powerful. It's one of those things where, you know, it's at the end you kind of forget about who was – something that happened in the middle. But I just want to say about how I liked how they treated Bron Breakker. So – Nate, on the regular NXT show that you have on the Daily Cast, we talk about Bron Breakker, and you know when he should have been called up a year ago, you know, some time frames like that. But do you think maybe the next 3 to 6 months, maybe by SummerSlam, do you see Bron Breakker joining the main roster? I'll let you two talk about that, and I'll hang on and listen. And that's all I will talk about. Again, I'll let you have some more callers on and some more emailers on. And thanks a lot, Nate and Brandon. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Brian, no problem, man. No problem. Appreciate the brevity. Like that was like short to the point. Like here's what we're gonna do. That's awesome. But no, thanks as always, man. But no, Bron Breakker. I mean, we've been talking for a while about, you know, when is he going to be called up to the main roster and things like that. And the character that he was in prior to getting together with Baron Corbin, prior to their feud, his kind of heel character, this badass, it was a cool character, kinda. But I think it would have got eaten alive on the main roster, to be honest with you. I don't think that presentation really would have worked for Bron on the main roster. However, now he finds a little bit of a comedic pairing with Baron Corbin, but there's still a powerhouse. It works. And this is the first time since Bron Breakker has been in NXT, since his debut, I have actually cared about Bron Breakker. He's never been able to grip me, never been able to grip Kelly, Bruce, on PWT Talks NXT, my co-host. And now we're all kind of into what he's doing. It's all of us to varying degrees, but we all actually care about what Bron's doing. When he was NXT champion, we very rarely thought about Bron Breakker as NXT champion, but tonight, and we haven't talked about the Men's Rumble. We haven't broke that down with the results and all of that yet. We will in a little while, but Breakker, I mean, 4 eliminations, I believe I believe that was the most for them in the Men's Rumble was by Bron Breakker. Very, very strong showing for him tonight. I would love to see him and Carmelo Hayes on the main roster sooner rather than later. I'll even throw Trick Williams in there. I think if Trick stayed in NXT, I would like to see Trick stay in NXT and have like a main roster or a main event run on his own, maybe get the NXT title away from Ilya Dragunov or whoever the next champion is, something like that. If they pulled Trick to the main roster, I think he's also ready. And he'd flourish. But I think hopefully by Stand and Deliver or after Stand and Deliver WrestleMania season, we'll probably see. I'm hoping we see either 2 or 3 of them debut on the main roster. Anything on that?
I saw someone surmise on Twitter, and I hadn't thought of it in real time, but it kind of makes sense that Bron Breakker, it almost felt like he was in the Brock Lesnar spot tonight.
Yeah.
And I almost sort of wonder if he was the answer, if he was the replacement, because all signs had pointed to the idea that Brock Lesnar would be in the Rumble, that he was poised to come back very soon and most likely tonight. And they very much treated Braun in a way that they would treat Brock in a match like this. He comes in and, you know, is a wrecking ball of sorts, racks up some eliminations, some impressive spots, and then gets dumped, which, you know, obviously if Lesnar had been in the match, he wouldn't have been the winner either. So same kind of scenario. It almost feels like they just swapped out one for the other. And, you know, kudos to them if that were the case. And if it were not, and Braun was scheduled for this kind of appearance anyway, you know, more power to them. I mean, I think that they did a good job building him up, and you know, the crowd seemed to be at least cognizant of who he was, and there was a segment of the audience that got behind him pretty quickly and was doing the bark with him and everything. I have not been much of a believer in Braun, and I do my best to, but usually fail at keeping up with NXT. So for me, having not seen him consistently week over week, I still have a hard time getting past the name. It is still...
Oh, it's awful. It's awful.
And for a long time, I heard people say, well, we got used to Roman Reigns, and that's a dumb name. And I agree, but I don't think it's as bad as Braun Breaker.
No.
Especially when you spell it with two Ks. It just makes it that much worse. I know that they don't want to go with the Steiner name, and I get it, but I just wish they'd find something better than that. I think it's limiting. Like I think it's as limiting as something like Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I it was the biggest thing for me, or one of the biggest things at first, for me to not be able to get behind him. It was the name. It was just how, between that and the tie-dye, and you know, yeah, he looked like he was coming out of the 90s, but whatever. So did NXT 2.0 at the time. But it was so hard to get behind him because of the name. At this point, I'm going to be honest with you, as dumb as it is, I've just accepted it. And it's been, to be honest, it's been a while since I've even had this conversation about his name, or even really thought about it. So maybe some people will, but I agree. I think it could potentially be limiting. I mean, WWE champion Dolph Ziggler never really had a great ring to it. WWE champion Braun Breaker, sure, maybe in the 80s, and he was like a minor breaking rocks or something, but especially you've got Braun Strowman, and it's spelled differently, and actually, well, I mean, I guess Bronson is what it's short for, Braun, but still, I don't know.
It sounds like a name that SNL would use on a wrestling skit to make fun of, like, a wrestler from the 80s.
No, 100%. But no, I mean, I think if given the time, I think he has it, but his, and he's actually gotten much better on the mic. He's still a Steiner, but his promos have gotten better. I actually really like the backstage interactions between he and Corbin recently. He, like, both of them, but Breaker,
Corbin's
especially
a funny guy.
He really is. Yeah. But, and he's bringing that out within Breaker, and he's kind of finding some range here that we haven't quite seen yet out of Breaker. He's really, Breaker's come off as just this guy who yells a lot. And now we're kind of finding a little bit of depth, and he's a little dumb, but not at the same time. I like it. I like the direction they're going with him. You know, I don't think they quite have the faith in him to quite yet, or at least I don't know if I would to really run with him just yet. All right. That said, let's go to Greg, because this is his show after all. So, I mean, I may as well allow him to speak. Greg, how was the Rumble, man?
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you so much for filling in for me tonight. Really appreciate it. You know, the Rumble to me as a live experience was fun, but I do wonder, and that's where I kind of send it back to you guys, I can see how it may not have been as fun watching on TV, because this was a crowd that was there to see the two Rumble matches. And there were two other matches on the card that really didn't seem to interest the crowd all that much. And, yep. you know, they were decent, but they weren't great. You know, the Roman Reigns, the four-way is kind of, you know, we're in the spot where we're replaying Roman Reigns' greatest hits, I fear. And even the two Rumbles, like if you take away the live aspect of it, I don't really know how good they actually were. So I'm just curious as to what, and I know you guys have probably given your thoughts about the show as a whole, and, you know, what did you guys think? What have the callers and emailers thought about the show as a whole?
So far we've gotten pretty much the same thing, that the Rumble matches were great, then the two matches in the middle existed.
Okay.
That was kind of my feeling as well. I don't know if I've actually come out and said that so far, but that was my feeling as well.
Also, it feels like people, I know at least from my perspective, and Nate, I think from yours, a little bit higher on the women's Rumble than the men's.
Yep. Okay. Matter of fact, Keith and Brandon, it kind of went and said that it may have been the best women's Rumble so far. Pretty high praise so far for the women's Rumble. We haven't quite talked about the men's Rumble as much, but we started with the women's Rumble.
Yeah, you know, watching the Rumbles live was sort of interesting because there were a lot of women in the women's Rumble that did not get much of a reaction at all from the live audience. And
Kansas.
Really, even in both Rumbles, I thought, you know, the entrances would get a reaction, the initial burst of offense from the wrestlers would get a reaction. But for the most part, there really wasn't much of a reaction. And I will qualify this by saying I was, you know how Gorilla Monsoon says they're literally hanging from the rafters? I was very close to hanging from the rafters. We were the second to last row. We were in the bleachers, folks, at Tropicana Field.
Wow.
So we were way up there. So, you know, take what I say about the crowd reaction with a grain of salt. Move from a great part of the crowd. But, you know, the women's and the men's, I mean, it was kind of quiet when there was just the wrestling going on, when you weren't anticipating someone coming out or when someone wasn't coming out and going on offense. And I think I didn't realize this until the men's Rumble, but I think a lot of that has to do with when you're watching on TV, you're being fed information constantly in that match from the announcers about what's going on, about who's feuding with who, about, oh, you know, these two are reigniting a feud. And being there live, you don't get that. And so you're just kind of left to your own devices to just kind of watch. And I'm not – when I say they were quiet, I'm not saying they were disinterested. They were – the crowd seemed to be taking in what was going on, but there just wasn't to react to, I think.
It's a lot of just tearing off and trying to dump people over the top. Like that's a lot of what the lulls are.
Yeah. And I mean, personally, that's one of my least favorite things about the in-person experience is not being able to hear the announce team, because you do that. There's so much that gets fed to you from the announce team. I mean, you know, Pat McAfee, Corey Graves and Michael Cole, I thought were on point tonight. There were quite a few times where they actually had me laughing with some of the things that they said. Like I wrote down a few, like Michael Cole going off about Valhalla's antlers. Like it was dumb, but like it made me laugh. You know, there was a few other things too, but that was the first one that I happened to look at with my my notes here. But I thought they were really on point, and they definitely added to the kind of the grandeur of both matches. Yeah. But I mean, what was the, you know, the overall reaction? I mean, for, you know, for the winners for both matches.
I mean, Cody Rhodes got a huge pop. He got a huge pop coming out. He got a huge pop for the win. CM Punk got a very big pop coming out, and there were chants for him before the show. But what I thought was interesting, and I'm not sure how much this came across on TV, when it was down to Cody Rhodes and CM Punk, the crowd was pretty overwhelmingly pro-Cody. There were some pockets
of... That's what it
felt
like.
Did it? Okay. There were some pockets of CM Punk chants. Those were quickly drowned out by boos or chants for Cody Rhodes. And that surprised me a little. I thought it would be a little bit more 50-50, maybe even predominantly pro-Punk, given that this is his first match back in WWE. Cody Rhodes had won it last year. Maybe the fans were looking for someone new, but that was not the case. Cody, you know, Cody was the one that the fans chose when it came down to Cody and Punk.
Yeah, yes. It didn't feel like they were anti-Punk so much as they were just really, really pro-Cody.
Yeah,
that was kind of it.
There were certainly boos for Punk in spots for that when he was down to the last two there.
Yeah, it certainly seemed like the crowd was certainly like behind Cody, not necessarily like my perspective, you know, for it was CM Punk kind of like almost stealing the story away, you know, and that was kind of what I thought might be the story that they were going to tell us here was CM Punk is going to wind up throwing Cody over the top rope last minute, you know, maybe Cody was just about to do it and CM Punk did it, kind of how the reverse of the finish we got basically, you know, and I was actually, I sold myself on that as the finish. I was very surprised and happily surprised, pleasantly surprised that, you know, Cody did win. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, anything else on the, you know, on the in-person experience so far, like you said, you know, the two matches in the middle, you know, kind of seemed to lag a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. You know, LA Knight got his chance and everything like that, and they were really into him when he was on offense because then they could chant, and that really seems to be what it comes down to. I mean, I don't know if there's really an appeal to him outside of that, which, you know, that'll get him far and may have gotten him a pretty lucrative contract extension already, but it's a, you know, when he first took off, you wonder just how far he could ride this, and I guess until the next big thing comes in that you can chant along with, he's going to be the guy they choose. But, yeah, it didn't feel like there was a ton of heat. There's a lot of heat for Solo coming out and interfering. But other than that, you know, I didn't feel like, and maybe because it was, you know, Randy Orton, LA Knight, a couple of crowd favorites in there, the fans didn't choose a side necessarily on that. But it was not a real heated match, I didn't think, from a live perspective.
Did Reigns still get sort of the big star reaction? Because it seemed on TV, it seemed a little bit more muted, and I sensed a certain not quite hostility, but almost hostility toward him that I don't think I have really noticed on this run yet. It seemed like there was some audible Roman Reigns fatigue.
And that's where kind of being in a stadium like this, you don't really know how much of it is just the cavernous nature of the stadium kind of sucking the sound away and how much is like what you brought up, you know, is there a Roman Reigns fatigue factor? I thought he a star reaction, but I will say I thought it was not the level necessarily that I expected. So, again, whether or not that's just the sound traveling differently in a stadium than you would hear in a more packed in, more confined arena, I don't know. But I think that's something to watch as we get into WrestleMania season here and we go from arena to arena when Reigns does make his appearances.
I mean, I know at least for me coming into tonight, like, you know, even though I've enjoyed the build to get to, like, you know, this fatal four-way so far, I mean, I know that there's no chance in hell anybody other than Roman's going to be walking out of here with the title, especially with The Rock, you know, kind of being strung and you know, all of that, everything that they're building towards WrestleMania. So I just kind of went, eh. I mean, I paid attention and I was watching the match and everything, but I was not nearly as interested in that as I was even Logan Paul and Kevin Owens, to be honest with you, because at least with that, I was like, okay, who's going to win? What's going to happen? I wasn't quite sure which way they could go. I could make a case either way, but with this one, it was like, all right, hopefully they'll give me some good action, but I still know who's going to come out on top. So,
there's certainly been Roman Reigns matches during this run where you're pretty sure he's going to win, but you just, in your own mind, you leave the door open that, well, you know, Sami Zayn might win in Montreal, you know, that sort of thing. I don't think there was any of that here with this. Or you have matches like the series he had with Kevin Owens where you really didn't think Kevin Owens was going to win, but they were going to put each other through hell and it was going to be entertaining and stuff like that. That didn't even really apply to this match either.
Yeah, it really didn't. Like, you know, the biggest draw for this match for me was how is LA Knight going to look? How big of a star? And actually, I guess that's a good question. How was the response for LA Knight in the crowd tonight? I mean, it seemed like he got a pretty good pop. I mean, we got everybody, you know chanting yeah along with him, I think, for some chops. So, I mean, it came across like he was very well received anyway.
Yeah, he was. And you heard the yeahs in the concourse before the show and everything like that. So, you know, he got a really good reaction coming out. But, you know, again, he didn't really get that star reaction during the match aside from the yeah chance when he was hitting somebody, you know. And to me, that can only really take you so far before fans latch on to the next thing that comes along. I mean, you have to have something to offer that's going to give you more staying power. And I'm not sure we've really seen that out of LA Knight. And again, this is fine for now because it's working for him. But there's going to come a time where fans may demand more, and we'll have to see if he can step up to that.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. I mean, he's certainly got the chops on the mic, and I think he's got the potential. But yeah, we'll see if we can see if he actually can step up to the plate and make it happen. Brandon, anything else for Greg? Greg, did you want to stick around, or did you have other things to do tonight?
Well, I'm trying to make it home before 3 o'clock in the morning.
All right.
That's my main goal. It's about a little over 2 hour drive from where I am in Naples, to St. Pete. So, you know, we lucked out. We found a great kind of hidden away parking spot and we were able to get out of there really quickly. And so that was a blessing. So we're on the highway heading home, which is really nice. The only other thing I want to add is, you know, with all the news that's come out about the lawsuit with Vince McMahon and everything like that, I know when I popped on, you guys were talking about it. And that really gave me great pause. And I went back and forth with my wife about whether or not even to go to the show, to be honest with you. Like, I times where I just felt uncomfortable going. And when we got there, I was kind of curious as to what the mood would be of the fans. And I can tell you, for the entire time that I was there, from the time I got out of my car to the time I got back in my car, I didn't hear one word about it. No one spoke about it. It was not a topic of conversation for anyone sitting around us, for anyone that I, overheard in the concourse or anything like that. It was the event took place, and the fans reacted as if that did not happen, as if there was no lawsuit, as if there was no Wall Street Journal article, as if none of that had taken place. And I don't know if it's fans just kind of wanting to, when they go to a show like this, live in that fantasy world where nothing bad happens and everything is contained inside the WWE universe. I'm not sure if, you know, how much that's really broken through to the general audience of WWE in terms of, like, you know, the non super online people, if that's broken through in the last couple of days, but I did not hear word one about it. And that did surprise me.
That actually is very surprising. I mean, I would have expected to hear, you know, somebody talking about it while waiting in line, you know, at a merch table or something like that, you know? I was listening to Busted Open with Tommy Dreamer talking about it. And one of the things he was saying is, you know, wrestling has always been an escape and it's what it should be for people. And it's like, you know, it doesn't want to see, you know, certain like negative things like this, take that away from people. And, you know, neither do I, not to downplay anything that happened whatsoever,
of course.
But, you know, Brandon brought this up earlier, you know, none of the wrestlers, none of the the staff that are out there every day, building the rings and driving the trucks and lighting and all of that. None of them had anything to do with this. It's like they went out, they put on a great show, keep the fans entertained, and I feel like that's what the fans kind of want, whether or not I'm right or not. But I know it has broken into the mainstream because my parents knew about it. So there was that.
NBC News has done a piece on it as well.
So. Yeah. So they didn't know details, but they're like, what's going on with Vince? And one of the things I even went back and forth with it tonight, even opening the show with like, the Royal Rumble is like my favorite time of the year. This is my favorite match of the year. It's like I almost opened the show saying I don't want to talk about Vince, but I'm like that wouldn't be fair, We really can't do that. But that was my feeling. Like I don't want Vince to ruin my favorite match of the year. And I don't think I let him do that. But it's certainly a cloud that's dangling over a fun night for sure.
I thought it was sort of nice to have certain aspects of the presentation tonight not at all mirror what we've seen from Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn. There were some clear injections of whether they be Triple H ideas or just someone else. But regardless, I mean, the cold open to wrestlers arriving at the arena, I thought was a really nice touch and something that we wouldn't have seen under Kevin Dunn. And I thought that served not only the purpose of just freshening up the presentation and the show, but also trying to send a message, whether it's true or not, because we know that people who were privy to what was going on are still back there. And that's hard to stomach. But they clearly wanted to send a message that, hey, this is a different company now. This isn't the same company. And again, whether or not that is true can certainly be debated, but there was an attempt tonight for sure. And I think, Greg, like you bringing up the fact that people weren't acknowledging it or talking about it is such a unique and good point, because wrestling, we often forget, like, pro wrestling gets compared to a lot of other forms of media, but it really is a singular experience at the end of the day. There isn't anything quite like this. I mean, if you want to compare someone in a similar position of power abusing said power to an unfathomable degree, I think you can look at someone like Harvey Weinstein. And in the case of Harvey Weinstein, there aren't millions of people or thousands of people debating on the internet whether or not to watch movies that Harvey Weinstein produced.
Yeah.
You just don't see that. But in effect, that's what we're doing here. And it's a very different scenario. It's a singular experience.
Yeah, no, it is. It wrestling is a very, it's a unique form of entertainment. Like one of the things, my sister said this tonight, we were kind of talking a little family gathering when this got brought up. And, my sister said something, and she's not a wrestling fan, but was like, I always equate Vince McMahon to the time he ended up putting Stone Cold's wife's dogs in the oven. And I was like, oh, yeah, that happened. And she's like, I've hated him ever since. And I'm like, I barely remembered that until she brought it up. Nobody watches a movie and thinks, that Tom Hanks is really, like Forrest Gump, so I think it's kind of hard for a lot of people to try and break that reality sometimes. And reading through a lot of this, that document today, you almost read it with Vince in character. At least that was kind of me. It's like, so how much of that sleazy Vince character that we wound up seeing throughout the 90s, like, that's just a fraction. I mean, a tiny, tiny fraction of what most likely went on. And it's appalling. It's absolutely appalling. But anyway, Greg, we do have quite a few other people. We got people in line to talk. So,
let me keep you and don't stay up too late.
Yeah. No, I'm not gonna.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to call in and give the live perspective, and maybe you'll have some others as well, but I'll get off and find somewhere to stop and eat, and you guys can continue on, and we'll talk with all these people again next Sunday.
All right. Well, sounds good, man. Sounds good. I'm glad you had a good time, and drive safe. Find something to eat.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Take care.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Now, with that, let's get back to the phone lines. I thank you guys for being patient. We've got, again, we've still got quite a few people to get to here. So I'm going to go next. Area code 281. So 281, we'll talk at least one or two talking points here. And what do we got for the Rumble?
Well, this is Andy from Houston, Texas. And
hey, Andy,
I was going to mention one thing with the Vince McMahon article. What I found really notable was the response from his representative saying that it was replete with lies, fabrications, and distortions of the truth. And all I can think of is I don't know how you can undistort any of the text or allegations in a way that absolves him of, like, even a portion of the heinous acts he's being accused of. So it's just the defense feels very very hollow or shallow, that there's really not a lot he can defend himself with, which is why he stepped down as the chairman so quickly, and I'm very grateful for that, because that we don't want that to be a drawn out endeavor.
No, and I agree. I mean, you know, the statement, I don't have it in front of me, but it was a very, very hollow statement. That he put out. The one from TKO was, it was very corporate, but it was certainly not. Not in Vince's favor by any stretch. I'd recommend, actually, if anybody from VIP, the Wade Keller hotline from, I believe, yesterday, he kind of goes into a lot of 25 minutes, and he goes into a lot of what happened with the legal things, and it kind of goes into a lot of that, but. I completely just lost my train of thought. It is 1:15 in the morning, and my brain's not completely on fire right now. Brandon, let me throw it over to you, and maybe it'll come back to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that when I read Vince's statement, it just read to me like typical legal jargon. Just, you know, what a lawyer in this position with a client being accused of what he's being accused of would say. I mean. You know, as you sort of alluded to, there really is very little that he can defend himself on. I mean, granted, if there are certain elements to the story that are fabricated, there's still the plethora of text messages, and at that point you're talking about trying to prove or you know, essentially suggest that those are somehow fabricated, and I very much doubt that they would have been, you know, allowed to be included or referenced and without being vetted first. I think it was hollow, just typical, you know. So it's what his lawyers had to do in this position. I don't fault them for doing it, but I don't think it amounts to anything.
Yeah, and what I was about to say kind of came back to me. Wade breaks down both of the statements from TKO and from Vince in that Wade Keller hotline for VIP members the other day, and um, it it's kind of interesting because both of those statements, you know, like I said, very corporate, very Vince's especially very hollow. But even Endeavor, the one from Endeavor, you know, TKO, they kind of like wipe themselves clean a little bit, saying all of this happened before we took over, but we take this very seriously. So, you know, which in my opinion, I think is kind of a smart move because, you know, you're trying to play damage control. You're trying to say, okay, this stuff all happened under somebody else's watch. We're not going to allow that. I personally think that was probably smart. But I'm also not a business guy. I fix computers for a living. So, you know, there's that. Vince, it's, yeah, I'm shocked and I'm not at the same time. I just can't believe the things that you read in that legal document. I can't fathom somebody making up. So I don't know. It just seems way too much like Vince and the stories we've heard and to not be credible.
And again, just to reiterate, I mean, studies show that the number of women who
right.
fabricate this stuff is very, very little.
Right.
It's minuscule in comparison.
Yep. Exactly. Andy, anything else?
Well, I won't speak anything further on that front because I figure we should give the focus back to the Rumble. I did like that there were no wrestling duds in the Women's Royal Rumble, which I guess is why this one seems like the best of them up to this point, because there was nobody there that seemed out of place or incapable of wrestling. There was no legends coming out like Lita, who looked like they were extremely out of ring shape and potentially endangering others, being, you know, as slow as they are. And I guess the only one that didn't do any actual wrestling was Valhalla, but
yeah.
That was, she came and went, and there was really nothing to make of it. So I did enjoy the Women's Royal Rumble very much. I was only sad that the Kabuki Warriors got eliminated so early, because just I relish any chance I get to see Asuka in the ring.
Oh, absolutely. No, it like we were talking about. I think this was a very well booked Royal Rumble, for the women. There are only even two. I don't even want to call them botches, just kind of missteps that I can think of in the match. One with Bianca Belair during her entering the ring. She kind of tripped over the top rope, but so what? And then there was Ivy Nile when she went to go give, I think it was like a belly-to-belly suplex or something like that to Indy Hartwell, and she dropped her initially. But then she saved it by just deadlifting her up and doing the move anyway. So, other than that, like, everybody felt like they belonged there. Maybe with the exception of like, and I hate to say this because she's my girl, but with the exception of like Candice LeRae, when her music hit, the crowd went mild. And unfortunately, it's kind of something we've been seeing within the family, with Johnny and Tommaso Ciampa too, for that matter. Outside of like Candice LeRae, even Indy Hartwell got a somewhat decent reaction. Everybody seemed like they belonged and they kind of, could, I wouldn't say could potentially win, but like, we didn't see any comedic spots, characters come out, returning legends or anything. I really liked the way this was booked. I think everybody in this match, with maybe the exception of Valhalla, walked away, better for it. And even with Valhalla, there's now a story there to tell, whether it be with R-Truth or Nia Jax, who did eliminate her with the whole R-Truth thing. That could certainly happen too. So, Andy, anything else there or move on?
Well, I guess two observations, and then I'll let you guys get to the next caller. One, it just,
sure.
The Liv Morgan just felt out of place being one of the last three, and it feels like every time she gets this outsized push relative to how I feel she's clicking with the audience, she doesn't exude the same type of serious star presence as, say, Jade Cargill, who in a single appearance just catapulted herself to being what I would consider near main event status with just everything that she did in the ring. And then the last thing, I guess, I was only disappointed in the Men's Royal Rumble with how much they projected a Cody win by having CM Punk continuously look at the WrestleMania sign as if he was you know, desperately seeking to make it to the main event at WrestleMania, and it just seemed really ham-fisted with how they were doing that. Almost, I don't know if that was purposeful so people wouldn't get their hopes up and understand, yeah, he's not going to win, or if they thought they were being really dramatic with, you know, just showing how much CM Punk really wanted to win. But it just seemed really unnecessary to me when they had a good enough story of a battle of wills between two people.
Well, it's unfortunately it's that time of year where all wrestlers are brainwashed to stare at that sign. It's bright and it's up there and it says WrestleMania, which is, you know, an exciting time of year. But no, I you know, in all seriousness, I agree with you. Like I understand why they do it. It's a branding thing at this point. It's creating those WrestleMania moments on the road to WrestleMania, and so they can create it, you know, put it in a video package, you know, that CM Punk pointed to the sign, or Cody Rhodes pointed to the sign, or, you know, whatever. I get it, but man, yeah, it does. It not only does it feel kind of just old and stale and kind of dumb at this point, but, you know, like you said tonight, it kind of ended up foretelling the finish here. You know, it was one of the first things that I started thinking of, you know, where CM Punk may lose. You know, going, it kind of, when it came down to the two, I still thought Cody was going to go over. Matter of fact, Cody was my pick to win tonight. Kevin Catani had a pick 'em, and that, so he's got it. I said Cody, if anybody doesn't believe me, but, you know, he was my pick tonight, but coming down to the final two, I'm like, okay, you know, I think I talked about this earlier. You know, maybe it was going to be CM Punk. He's going to cost Cody the Royal Rumble. And then we have a feud between the two of them leading up to WrestleMania, who actually gets the match, yada, yada. You know, it wound up, obviously, Cody Rhodes there. I really enjoyed the, you know, the way that they, the way this kind of all wound up playing out for Cody. Brendan, anything else on this before we move on?
It's funny that I think that the less time you spent on the internet in the lead up to the Royal Rumble, the more obvious you probably thought it was that Cody Rhodes would win. Because,
yes.
I mean, they hammered home really heavily the fact that Cody's got to be the first one in 26 years to go back-to-back. Cody's got to finish the story, all this, you know, for weeks on end. And under normal circumstances, I think people would be looking at that and think that it's glaringly obvious that he's going to do it. But then you had just so much conjecture online about, you know, well, it's going to be Punk and they're going to set up Cody a different way. And, well, no, it's going to be The Rock. Clearly, you know, The Rock is facing Roman Reigns, so Cody Rhodes can't win the Rumble. So then who is it going to be? And then, you know, something quote unquote leaks that says it's going to be Gunther. And then, so I think the more time you spent online this week, the more likely you were probably able to convince yourself that it was someone else. I mean, ultimately, I think that the four guys who wound up in the ring at the end were the only four guys who ever had a shot in hell from the start.
Yep.
And I think that it, you know, McIntyre was the most logical to go first, and then Gunther was the most logical to go after that. And then you were left with the two guys that really felt like there was a legitimate shot that they could win. And I still suspect, unless plans have changed drastically, that, you know, we end up seeing CM Punk challenge Seth Rollins.
Yep, definitely. Andy, thank you very much. Anything to follow up on that?
Just that despite all the build up with Cody and Roman Reigns, I'm just more excited at the prospect of CM Punk and all the different people that he can wrestle and feud with, and it won't feel as forced as what it seems like Cody's story has been up to this point. But thank you again, guys.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. All right. So we gotta move a little rapid fire here, not because I necessarily want to, but because we have a time limit with Blog Talk, which is going to end in 30 minutes and 17 seconds, and we get kicked off the air. So we still have 5 people in the caller queue. So let's see what we can do to get through. Get everybody on the show here. Let's go to area code 615.
Nate, Brandon, it's good to talk to you. Sean from Murfreesboro. It's always fun to be on here with you guys. How you doing?
Sean, what's going on, my man?
Oh, not much. I won't go into the Vince stuff because you guys have talked about it a lot, and I have a lot of the same sentiments. It's unfortunate, but I think TKO hopefully is moving them in the right direction, and that's the main thing to be kind of positive about, at least. Yeah. So I'm thankful for that. About the Women's Rumble, I'm with you guys. It was definitely, really good. There were some spots I didn't like, and you guys talked about the point of the sign. I think a lot of women were doing that too, and I don't really like that when they kind of focus on that and they look at that and they, a lot of the friendships, like, oh, we're all trying to be friends, but we're not going to, we're not all in it for ourselves. I didn't like some of the stuff with Piper and Chelsea. They went too much into that a little bit. And with Maxine and Shotzi, they didn't really belong, really, honestly. They didn't look that great. But other than that, I thought Jade came off like an absolute star. She was my surprise that I've talked about to you, on the post shows a lot. And so I was, felt good to see her there, and she looked great. But I wanted to hear your thoughts real quick about Liv eliminating her. As much as Jade came off as a star, I didn't like that. I know Andy just talked about Liv not feeling like that big of a deal, and I've never been a big Liv fan myself. And for her to come off on at 30 was kind of predictable, but I was like, whatever. And then her eliminating Jade, I just didn't really care for it. What did y'all think?
I'm kind of with you, to be honest. Like, Liv, to me, and this is nothing against Liv. I think she's a great performer, and, never heard anything bad about her, really. So, nothing against her whatsoever. But for me, I've never been able to buy her as a credible main event wrestler. Like, when she was champion, it felt like a token championship run, and it didn't that's kind of just how I've always kind of felt about Liv, even down to the NXT days, well before I was covering it for the Torch, but still following NXT. I never, she just kind of always felt like, upper mid card to me. So for her to come out 30, returning from injury, fine, whatever. Good kind of surprise, and not really, I guess, because a little kind of knew it was coming, sort of, if you're paying attention. But nice for the crowd. Jade Cargill, with how she came out tonight, she took Nia Jax. Now, Nia Jax is like 3 times the size of Liv Morgan, and she just picks Nia Jax up and throws her out of the ring. And now Liv Morgan is able to kind of do the same thing with Jade. And it's a little tough to buy into that for me. I'll give it a pass because Liv is returning tonight. They are pushing her as a big star. So I can understand why they did it, but I'm not super high on it myself. What about you?
I get the strategy behind it, in that Liv gets the big return. She doesn't really have many standout moments during the course of the latter portions of the match, but she makes it to the end. Now, I'm in a similar spot with Liv, where I think that there's something there, in the sense that the crowd has always been into her, and she has an undeniable connection with the crowd. And I think that's important to cultivate and to recognize, because sometimes you kind of just let those talents fall by the wayside. Now, with that being said, I think that they have always struggled to define who she is. I don't know who Liv Morgan is. I don't think we've ever gotten a clear indication one way or another as to what the character is. And sometimes she seems to change it on a whim. So if they have any serious aspirations with her, I would hope that there is a plan to better define the character. As far as her eliminating Jade, I take solace in the fact that it was a rapid fire situation where all three women were teetering on the brink and anyone could have been eliminated at any time. I think that the alternative to that position, if you can't swap out the wrestlers involved, because if you put someone stronger than Liv in that position, then I think the criticism can potentially be erased. But the alternative is Jade tosses Liv and then Bayley gets the upper hand on Jade. And that's fine if you still do it in rapid succession the way that they did here. But what I think they were attempting to avoid, and what they successfully avoided, was you don't want Jade and Bayley to be facing off one-on-one for any extended period of time the way that, say, Cody and CM Punk did later in the night, because that's going to define Jade down if she loses to Bayley, even though it's just, you know, getting tossed over the top rope. The fact that everyone was kind of huddled together over there, it could have been any of the three of them in the heat of the moment. Liv just happens to hit, her finish. I give it a pass, but not a strong pass. I think that the better solution there would have been Jade tosses Liv and doesn't turn around in time to see Bayley dumping her over the top. So Bayley just catches Jade by surprise at the end. And there isn't any, you know, there's no extended wrestling between the two of them. It's just a surprise. The savvy veteran gets the better of Jade. And that's that.
Sean, I hate to cut you off, but I'm going to cut you off. We got to move on, unfortunately, time and stuff.
No worries, man. It's good to talk to you guys and have a good night. Good to hear Brian Riverkeep and all the other callers, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, talk to you later, my friend. Good to hear from you, man. All right. Yep. Let's keep going. We'll go to area code 217.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I just wanted to make a quick comment and ask a question. The comment is I liked how the announcers with Bron Breakker, and maybe they could do this more with other wrestlers going forward, bring up his speed and compare it to an NFL wide receiver. I think it brings a nice touch of bringing up, hey, these guys are legitimate athletes. You think that this wide receiver or this running back runs fast. This guy hits the ropes as fast as those running backs or wide receivers. And my question, okay, CM Punk loses. What do they do with him from here?
Brandon, let me throw it to you for that.
Yeah, I liked I appreciate the call out there for Michael Cole to make the allusion to Tyreek Hill. I thought that was a nice little mention. It sold Braun as being, you know, a powerhouse and super fast and agile. So I thought that was cool and not something that you typically hear out of WWE commentary. They don't often like to bring up modern day athletes. So I thought that was good. As for Punk, I still feel like after tonight, it feels like he is the most likely to come out and face Seth. I mean, I guess that there is a possibility that they still slot Gunther in that role. But to me, Gunther has a few other challengers that make a lot of sense. In fact, after what they did with the two of them tonight, you could see him facing Bron Breakker. I mean, that would make a lot of sense if they want to call Bron up. So I think Punk is still slotted in that Seth Rollins position. I think it makes the most sense. I think Punk gets a big win at Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the direction for Punk. I mean, it makes the most sense. they've already kind of alluded to a match between the two of them, you know, with just kind of things that, you know, that have happened in the past that I'm sure I could think better of if it wasn't so late. But, you know, obviously they've had kind of stare downs and they've had, you know, feuds, a kind of a feud building already. So I mean, that really seems to make the most sense. Even if he didn't win tonight, you know, coming in second, I feel like he could probably make the case. Something will probably work out where, you know, that's kind of the direction they go. Any follow-up on that? Yeah, give you that one there.
No, I think that'd be it. I know you guys are running hard up against the clock here on Blog Talk Radio, so I'll just hang up, listen to the rest of the show. So long from the land of Lincoln.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate you hanging on this long. And yeah, the running against the clock is the theme of the night between the Royal Rumble and this podcast. We may wind up sticking around. If you're able to, Brandon, sticking around after the buzzer goes off to kind of cover a couple things, but sure. If we don't get to them. But all right, let's go to the next, I believe is 773. Here we go. 773. There we go. How are we doing tonight? Seven, seven, three. Are you there? All right. We'll come back. I may have already gone here, but I don't know. 615.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, I'd love to talk to you guys again. You know, it'd
okay.
be great. That'd
you know
be
what?
Wonderful,
hey, all right, Sean, you know what? I just missed it. No, all right, sorry, I'm going to put you on hold. All right, sorry, we're going to go down the line then. 434.
Hey, it's Johnny Fairplay. What's up, guys? How's it going, Brandon? How's it going, Greg?
Hey.
Hey, how's it going? Greg's not here tonight. This is Nate. Johnny, how are you, man?
I'm good. I just left the Rumble.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. So did Greg. That's why I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. So I've been listening to you guys for about 35 minutes. And
sure.
I just want to start with one thing. Vince McMahon resigned, right?
Yes.
He's gone. I don't care about Vince McMahon. And I went to the Royal Rumble not thinking about Vince McMahon. And I don't want to hear about Vince McMahon. I want to talk about the Royal Rumble because that's the event that I went to tonight that I enjoyed more than life itself, and that's what I thought we were here to talk about. So other than Sean's call and the ridiculousness that I heard for 30 minutes talking about Vince McMahon, why are we talking about Vince McMahon? I'm not, and no, we don't need to. Let's talk about the Royal Rumble because we had a great show tonight, and that's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about positive good stuff because we love wrestling and that's what we're here to talk about.
You know what? I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it was definitely something that came up and we discussed, but yeah, I mean, Royal Rumble is literally
he doesn't work there. He doesn't work there. He resigned. Good riddance. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been to five WrestleManias. WrestleMania is the granddaddy of them all. I've never been to a Royal Rumble because I enjoy having people come to my house. We do the little lottery gimmick. We put, you know, $5 in. We get our little gimmicks, whatever. We do all the things. I had the opportunity to come to where I proposed to my fiance 3 months ago. I had the opportunity to come back to Tampa to take her here to go to the Royal Rumble the first time ever. It was magical. I loved it. And guess what? The guy before the other caller, whatever. We didn't talk about Vince McMahon because we all came to see the Royal Rumble because we love the Royal Rumble. So I'm here to talk about one of the greatest nights of professional wrestling I've ever been a part of, and the fact that Cody Rhodes got a chance one chapter further to finish the story is a magical moment in my life. And I'm the biggest bad guy I know, and I'm rooting for the good guy here.
No, 100%. How did it? Obviously, this is a huge, huge moment for you. kind of describe the moment, for when Cody won, and we got a little bit of a description from Greg, but Greg was like, I was second to last row. So,
I was second row.
All right.
I was a little closer. So,
a little bit.
It was freaking nuts. I mean, I'm sitting there watching. I'm just like, I thought it was so cool in the fact that you had everyone loves CM Punk. Everyone loves Cody Rhodes. And I'm just like, is this the moment where the crowd turns? And they didn't. Like, they were just really there for both of them. And we're all sitting there like, okay, well, then Punk obviously wins because that's just the easy way out. Because, allegedly it's The Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania, and that's ruining the story that we were 2 years in. And I'm just and we weren't rooting against Punk, but we weren't rooting not against Punk. I thought it was magical, brother. I've never seen something where the fans were like just pro the end. It was just like, either way this goes, we're not unhappy, but we kind of want the Cody thing. That's magical, yeah. Man.
Oh no, it was a great, great moment tonight. Absolutely great moment tonight. Brandon, anything on?
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I think it speaks to how well they've done cultivating baby faces, especially on the Raw side. I mean, you've got guys that are incredibly over. I mean, Jey Uso, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes. I mean, Drew McIntyre now a heel, but doing incredibly well for himself. Gunther, obviously, as a heel, very, very over. Sami Zayn, who returned tonight and got a good star reaction. I mean, it very much helps the cause when the final four guys in the ring are all massively over in their own ways. And all
yeah.
have some fairly legitimate claims to actually winning the thing. It helps build tension for sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
And honestly, I'm anti three-way dances. I have no problem with CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, three-way dance. No problem.
Yeah,
and they could do that. Yeah.
Three-way dance.
I could be talking to that. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I do not really like triple threat matches whatsoever. They're hard to book. They're hard to necessarily follow. But I think that could definitely be money. That could definitely be money
sure. Drew McIntyre might like as much as I love the story of Cody Rhodes. Drew McIntyre has, I think, the best character in WWE in years.
Well, he's a justified heel, which you very rarely get. I mean, he's completely logical. His turn made sense.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you. You guys are killing it. I love Sean. Sean knows I love him too. But listen, this ain't the Vincent Mann story. This is Royal Rumble. Let's talk about the Rumble. I love you guys. I love the Torch. I love wrestling. Thank you.
Johnny, good to hear from you, man. Good to hear from you. I've heard you a bunch of times on the Torch, but haven't actually had the pleasure of speaking with you yet. So good to talk with you.
Thank you, sir. You're great. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Johnny. All right, with that, let's go on. We've got two more. We've got 6, 7, 8. Let's go there now. 6, 7, 8. All right, we'll try coming back. Yeah, right. Okay, 6, 7, 8 nope, they didn't drop off. Somebody else did. Okay. This looks like it's an international call. So if you hear unmuted, well, you're part of the show.
Hi.
Hello, how are you tonight? What'd you think of the Rumble?
I thought the Rumble was amazing. I thought the Women's Rumble was especially amazing. Lots of great stories being told, great pacing, great performance by Bailey. I think they foreshadowed a lot of great things, especially Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair for WrestleMania. First question, if they do that match at WrestleMania, who would it be, the heel, or would you do a babyface or babyface?
Sorry, you faded out just a little bit at the end of there. Did you repeat the question?
They foreshadowed Bianca Belair versus Jade Cargill for WrestleMania to do the match. How would you book it? Babyface versus babyface, or would you have one of them be heel?
I think personally, I'm like, I'm always in the camp of babyface versus heel. You can do a babyface in certain circumstances and make it work, but I'd probably be more in that kind of camp. What about you?
Yeah, I certainly typically agree with that. I wonder who you make the heel there. The obvious thing is to go with Jade. I think she's more naturally a heel. I think that, you know, she's probably more comfortable in that role given what she did in AEW. But I think given the star reaction she got tonight, it's going to be hard to get people to boo her. I think that, you know, you might be better off with it being Bianca, and yet at the same time, they're launching this new reality show with Bianca and Montez Ford, and I don't know if you want to turn her right now either.
That's a good point. That's definitely a good point. I mean, you know, with Jade, I just immediately think of her as a heel. So it's like, even though she got the star power tonight, and, you know, Nia Jax is obviously a heel, and she went toe-to-toe with her and threw her over the top rope and all that, in my head, I'm still thinking, like, that's the direction they might go with her, but you know, they may not. It's with the reaction that she got tonight, I would not be surprised whatsoever if they did wind up going, you know, babyface. I think personally, I would prefer to see a heel Jade, and kind of a continuation of what she did in AEW. And admittedly, I don't keep up with AEW like I do with WWE products, but, you know, I did kind of keep up with some of the things she did in AEW. And, yeah, I think, she did some incredible heel work over there. And I agree. I think that's probably where she feels probably more naturally comfortable. At least that's the way it comes off on TV. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they book this, but
I think if they wanted to, I mean, a feud like this should have some legs, and
yeah,
where being WrestleMania, being what WrestleMania is, I don't necessarily fault them if they want to go into that thing as this just being a showcase match between two babyfaces. They feel out what the crowd in Philadelphia thinks, and then they go from there. If they want to revisit this at SummerSlam for a title, if they want to do it down the road and then define one of them clearly as a face and as a heel, that I think could work too, where, you know, you have the match at WrestleMania, but it's more of the start of the story rather than the end or the story itself, and you kind of let the crowd dictate where you might end up down the road.
Caller, anything else for us?
I think they booked Bayley tremendously well in the match, and I feel because Asuka and Kairi Sane being limited to very early in the match, and the miscommunication between the three of them in the match, and the reception that Bayley got in the match, I think it's taken up but yeah, babyface at WrestleMania. I'm really looking forward to that match. And who do you think? How do you think that the match plays out between them?
Yeah, Brandon.
I had a bit of a hard time hearing. Was it regarding Bayley and her win and how things play out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I suspect that obviously, like you kind of alluded to, that the turn will be coming for Bayley. She'll you know, end up in a babyface role and probably against, you know, some pretty stacked odds against the remaining members of Damage Control. I think they can tell a really fun story there and get the crowd really behind Bayley. I would guess that this would be a coronation for Bayley. I mean, she has never had a moment on the main roster to be a celebrated major main event level babyface champion. And this is an opportunity. I mean, granted, she's won women's titles on the main roster as a babyface before, but it was during a time that they were doing a lot of hot potato stuff. There just wasn't a lot of prestige with those titles at the time. This is a very different scenario for her. And I would expect that that's where they're going.
All right. Any we have 5 minutes left before we get kicked off the air. So any follow up on that?
I would like to see Bayley win the match at WrestleMania. I've been a big fan, and I thought she was amazing as babyface, but badly mismanaged. A couple of more quick questions. What did you make of the comedy done throughout both Rumble matches?
I thought they did a great job putting.
Especially Chelsea Green comedy. Even though I don't usually like the way WWE does comedy.
Yeah, like I liked the way they kind of incorporated comedy into both the men's and women's matches, you know, with the inclusion of R-Truth, in both at number 24, anytime R-Truth is on screen is always going to get a pop from me. And Chelsea Green, I mean, I feel like she showed some great range here tonight, you know, because not only can she wrestle, and she's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but she can certainly wrestle. But she's a character wrestler. And, she showed that on the indies with like the kind of crazy bride gimmick that she was playing for a little while. And, now here, you know, kind of playing, with Piper Niven to play off of. I thought she did a really great job kind of incorporating good wrestling and comedy in timing into the match. Brandon.
I was a big fan of her spots in this match. I thought they were really well done. I thought they were, like you said, Nate, really well timed. I think that there's a pretty big distinction between comedy for the sake of comedy and comedy that is simultaneously getting other wrestlers over, and that's what this was meant to do. Chelsea was made to look like a fool and get squashed repeatedly, but it was not at the expense of anyone. People enjoyed seeing her, you know, get beat up. And also, she was selling great offense from the larger women in the match, which I thought was great. I mean, she was a punching bag for Nia and for Piper Niven, you know, inadvertently, essentially. Piper took her down a few times by accident, and that's where the comedy stemmed from. But I just thought it was really well done, well produced. Yeah.
No, for sure, for sure. All right. So, no, appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks. One final comment, please.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I absolutely was rooting for Cody Rhodes to win the Royal Rumble match. I'm a big fan of Cody as well. And do you think that Seth Rollins was diminished by Cody Rhodes quickly picking Roman immediately after winning? Do you think they could have milked that for the coming week? And thank you, and have a good night.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't know. I'm kind of hoping they just go immediately to it and they don't milk it for a couple weeks and kind of start building that story. Knowing them, they may milk it for like a week or two. We'll see. Brad, what do you think?
I don't know that they will. Cody pointed at the WrestleMania sign, soaked in the pyro, and then very definitively turned and stared at Roman Reigns' box and pointed to him. I think that they wanted to send a very clear message. I don't think it diminishes Seth at all. I think that Seth would even acknowledge that Cody's story is with Roman. It's not with him. Yep. I don't think that even though we as fans perceive the world championship to be beneath the Universal Championship, I don't think that Cody immediately choosing Roman sends that message. I think it just sends the message that, hey, he has unfinished business with Roman Reigns. Of course he's going to choose Roman Reigns.
All right. If you're listening live, that's going to bring us to the end of the show tonight because, I have 1 minute and 58 seconds to finish talking here. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to all the callers, the emailers. We're going to get to the emails in a second if you're listening to the recording here. Thank you very much. I'm going to end the episode now for the live callers, and we'll talk to you next week I'll talk to you on Tuesday. Greg will be here to talk with you next Sunday for Wrestling Night in America. All right. Now you guys are going to hear Blog Talk.